This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
It's been a long time. We have this chus to resume our learning of Eretz Chayfetz, the teachings of Rav Kook in Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, since the last time we were together, Rav Kook's the stock is going up, you know. It's getting higher and higher. Chazdei Hashem, everywhere I go, people I speak to, it's an amazing thing to me. Even in the mountains, I was talking to the Chassidus Chevra that were raised in everything that was not this way at all. And there's such excitement and learning of Kook's art. So it's a strong sign that we're all going to be going home soon.
Amen.
As we've seen from the beginning of the Sefer, Eretz Chayfetz is a wonderful and brilliant collection of Rav Kook's teachings, but it's very incomplete. Reb Shaila simply did not live to see the publication of many of the writings of Rav Kook. And also, even the pieces that Reb Shaila brings in Eretz Chayfetz that most of you have, many of the pieces that he brings are only part of a longer Torah, and hence then he wanted to make it to a small sefer, small countries, to give people a taste of Eretz Yisrael. But it's important that we try to get the entire Torah. So we're up to, in Eretz Chayfetz, we're up to Perek Vav, the chapter that's called Atchiyah. But in that perek, he brings from the Eretz Atchiyah, Perek Gimel. Let me see for a second. It's not the same for the Sefer. One second. Yeah, we're up to Beis. We already did Aleph, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, should. No? We're going to assume that we did already Aleph? Okay, so then let's do Aleph, and then let's do Aleph. I left my safe in there. Can you share a few minutes? I mean, you know each other. Okay, you say, so let's do Aleph. I thought we did Aleph. So let's do Aleph. Perek Vav, let's do Aleph. Now we'll get to the pages in a minute. Perek Vav, HaTchiyah. Now the word Tchiyah, revival, is a word that Rav Kook used very, very often in his writings, since he believed that we have already entered into a period, into the time of Tchiyah, with our return to Eretz Yisrael, before the state. The time of Tchiyah, of the Jewish people coming back to life. That's what all of his writings are about. We got used to Galus and a certain way of thinking, a certain way of living, and the time has come for us to return to life. The return to our land means the return to true life. And Perek Vav, let's do Aleph. Oitzer Achaim. So that's not the pages, this is the Sefer. Perek Vav, Aleph, so that's in the little Sefer, page I and Dalet. Oitzer Achaim Shal HaKadosh B'chol Lev B'Yisrael Gonos. The treasure of life, of all that is holy, is contained within, is hidden within the Jewish heart. B'chalusa shel ha'uma, in the entirety of the nation. Kach zehu aroide b'chol halichaisehu mahusa. This is something we've spoken about earlier. What Rav Kook is saying here is that, and we're going to continue with this and see if Beis in much greater depth, is that When it comes to nations of the world, when it comes to the world at large, the essence of what is the essence of America? What is the essence? What lies at the core of England? Germany, we know what that is. But what is at the core of Italy, of France, of America? What is the Nekuda HaPlimis? Now, each nation of the 70 nations, which are the father nations of the world, has certain characteristics, certain traits. And the Svarma HaKadoshim teach us that there are good things that we can learn from all the nations of the world. They have certain characteristics, midas. But there's only one nation on earth who at the very core, the very essence of that nation, is Kedusha, is holiness. And that's Yisrael. Whatever the other nations they have, there are good things too. But Kedusha is only Yisrael. And because of that, what Rav Kook constantly returns to is the need to revive that way of Kedusha, to reveal, to revive that light of Kedusha, and all of the extensions and all of the branches of Jewish life. We couldn't do that in Galus because we weren't in charge of our own economy. We weren't in charge of our own destiny, not our own political matzav. We were subjects, for the most part, of cruel despots who sought to restrain any expression of Jewish light and life. That's where we were living for so long. We didn't have control over our lives. Now, since Kedusha is at the core of each individual Jew, the individual and the nation, therefore Cook says, what's necessary is that let me just try to explain this in simple English. We must see to it, it's our responsibility in the generation of revival and the generation of Tchir. We must see to it that every single expression of Jewish life be under the control of Kedusha. Issue forth, be connected to the core of who we are, which is Kedusha. Koach Sehu HaRoide B'Kol, Rode means to control, to rule over. It's in this week's parsha. Where does it say, where do we have the word Rode in this week's parsha?
Man
will
rule over.
Huh?
Man will rule over animals.
In Hebrew, I'm asking. Rode B'Degas, B'Degas HaYom. B'Degayom, Rode means to control. To control, to rule over. To control. Koach Sehu HaRoide B'Kol HaLichoseh Mahusa. This Koach of Kedusha, that lies at the core, in the essence of a Jew and of the Jewish nation. It is the Korach that is Roide B'chol HaLichoseh HaMahusa. It rules over all of the pathways. Mahusa, in the essence of everything that, it has to rule over our economy. It has to rule over politics. It has to rule over our educational system. It has to rule over the way that we eat. It has to rule over the way that we earn a parnasa. It has to rule. Kedusha is, since Kedusha is who we are, it has to rule over every part of our lives. It's not that you live and then there's this Kedusha thing that's called shul and, you know, davening and learning. Kedusha is that essence that has to be in control of every single aspect of Jewish life. As I said before, that wasn't possible in Galus. It wasn't possible. We could think like that, and you could have feelings like that, but Lamaisa, to put into practice, it wasn't. We weren't in our place. And we couldn't do that. But with the Tchir, with the revival, and with our return, we have to see to it that this koach is aroyde b'chol alichosam who's arigosel machzavta. This natural longing and connection to the root, to the source. Machzavta means the root, the source of who we are. The tchiyosa, to the revival, la'arsa, to the land. Rak betchunas hakadosh mecheres lof yehikayemes. It can only really truly exist in its character of holiness. It can only exist in the character of His Holiness. If we try to imitate the nations of the world, and we try and we forget that we're an Am Kodesh, the Torah already says beferish that Eretz Yisrael is not going to accept us. So even though it could be that there's a powerful declaration and the United Nations recognizes, but if we're not going to be faithful to that kedusha that is gnuza, that is hidden, that is contained within each Jew and the Jewish people, it's not going to tolerate it. It's not because it's not a shidduch unless we're faithful and consistent. So of course, Rav Kook, in every single Torah, Rav Kook reminds us that now that we've come back, now that we're returning, the big question is, what is the Am Kodesh? What is the holy people of Israel? What do you do with Chol? What do we do with the mundane? Of course, Rav Kook is not the first one to struggle with this. This is the whole Torah of Hashem. Chol, Pnimius HaTorah. What do we do with Chol? Chol, that which is mundane, which is plain. What do we do with the economy? What do we do with everyday life? What do we do with literature? What do we do with art? Right? This is something that Rav Kook was constantly on his mind, and he did everything he could to move it in that direction of bringing about this integration of Kodesh and Chol. Because there's no such thing that a Jew can be completely, completely shakur, invested in Chol without Kedusha. I mean, people do that, but it's out of character. It's not the character of a Jew to lose himself in Chol, to lose himself in the mundane, in the physical. It's not the character. People try to do that, but it's not. It doesn't go. Eretz Yisrael is not sovelet, and the nature of a Jew is something which is not sovelet, and it brings to unhappiness and loneliness. It doesn't work for us because we're being unfaithful to the essence and to the core. If you are a Welts musician, if you have an unbelievable musical talent, you know, and your parents force you away from that, and instead, you know, want you to spend your life as an accountant or a lawyer or something like that, and to try to squash and to crush that unbelievable koyach that you have for music, and tell you that no, that doesn't have a place in your present life. So then the person is not accessing that essence of who he is. Music is something which is also at the core of a person. And it's a very dangerous thing to cut a person off from the makar of his life. It's very dangerous. Kedusha is what a Jew is. When you cut the Jew open, no matter how many layers he's covered with, the essence of a Jew is elokus, his godliness. And if that godliness does not find expression in everything that we do, we're not going to be able to ultimately be to be productive. We're not going to be able to be happy. We're not going to be able to be well adjusted. We're going to try to impersonate the nations of the world. And of course, this is very much as a part of what's happened with secular society. You know, it's just so. And anytime there's an imitation, it becomes silly. It becomes very silly. That's just in general, impersonations, imitations. So those who had a little bit of a taste of secular Israeli society know that it's a poor imitation of Western civilization. It's laughable, but it's very sad and pathetic. Because that's not who we are. So you can you could line the streets of Tel Aviv with places that are called Cafe Paris, Cafe New York, you know. And they're all misspelled. It's one of the... There's a friend of ours who, she's been for years putting together a collection. She has hundreds and hundreds of absolutely ridiculous English spellings on signs in Eretz Yisrael, all over. Because, you know, you could see that happening, even though all they have to do is to ask an American, right? You want to check, maybe there's somebody that's American or English, you want to check? So they spend $10,000 to put up a whole fancy sign. All over it's still the millions of misspelled signs. There was this crazy one, I can't say it here, but it's the absolute crazy one. That there was a, I'll tell you what the Indian is and you can figure it out, but I can't say it. But they were selling in groceries all over Eretz Yisrael with the Hechsher, the Badats. They were selling carp, a packaged carp, and it was misspelled. So the guy that wrote that, you know, he wanted to write carp and he wrote the letters in the wrong order. And you know that that guy will argue with an American and say, this is how you write. So that's just the symbol of how out of, it's just, we're out of our element. It's not our element, Western culture and civilization, which in the Torah that we're going to learn on the pages that you have from the Irish, say, of Kuk Mamish, tears it to pieces, dissects it. It's not our element. Our element is Kedusha. Our element is Kedusha. I had a conversation with a good friend of mine who's an Eretz Yisrael. He was there the whole Yom Tov. Unfortunately, he had to be there for his wife's Yom Tov, the first Yom Tov. So we were talking, which is today. So we were talking about, he was telling me about how he hasn't been there a long time in Eretz Yisrael. And he's been there for a day or two, whatever, for a simcha, but he hasn't been there. He's been now for 3 weeks. And he says to me, Moshe, you don't understand that when we hear in the streets of Yerushalayim, it's not that Yontiv or Yiddishkeit is like a second language. It's something foreign. Even the people who are not religious over here, everything here is Jewish. Everything here is Jewish, and it's not like that. And it's not that. Which we're keeping Yontiv. He was telling me how there's a guy and a girl, a guy, a boyfriend, a girlfriend or something, totally inappropriately dressed, and he wasn't even wearing a yarmulke, and he's walking around holding his lulav and she's carrying his esrog. So you can look at that if you're a chalila from another way, not an ayin tova. So you can look at that and say, oh, this is terrible. He's carrying a lulav, he's not even wearing a yarmulke. He should put on the yarmulke. What's the matter with him? But if you look at it the other way, there's nothing strange about carrying about a yid that's carrying a lulav. He'll put on a yarmulke when he benches lulav, whatever that is. Or he's bringing it to his brother who's from, I don't know what. But it's life. It's not out of life, it's life. In Eretz Yisrael, it's life. And that's why we could talk to each other a certain way, because we're in our element. We don't need certain kind of social things. It could be annoying, but it's the beauty of it is that it's life. It's when you're in your house, you should be polite, but you don't always say excuse me in your house. It's life, but more than those kind of things about the different social things, but Kedusha is the life of Eretz Yisrael. It's the life of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, what Cook is saying is that only when we remain fastened, attached to that tchunas hakodesh miyuchedes laofya, that particular, that unique quality of holiness, hikayemes, then it can exist. Va'ofya shel tchuna shel tchias achol. So now, Rav Cook very much supported tchias achol, the revival of the secular. But not, God forbid, the revival of the secular separated from Kedusha. And we spoke of this 1,000 times, learning Rav Kook. The Rav Kook supported art, but Jewish art. Art that expresses Kedusha, not pornography. He was supporting. He was raising money for the Bezalel School of Art and for music, Jewish music. I don't know what Kook would say about the stuff that they play at weddings now. That's not Jewish, but Jewish music, which expresses kedusha, which speaks to that part of a Jew that wants to become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Literature, chol. Yeah, write about subjects of this world that are chol, but from that perspective of kedusha. Write novels about families, about love, but from the perspective of kedusha. And that's all that he was fighting for. This is the tchiyah. Therefore, ha'if shal tchuna asher the tchiyah sachol. That character, that quality of tchiyah sachol, of the revival of chol, which again, we couldn't do that in Golis. We couldn't. We were not balabatim over there. So, but now we're home, and now we have to have streets, and we have to have parks, and we have to have schools, and we have to have banks and stores, with the balabat. So naturally, there's a tchiyas achal, and there was at that time, less so now, but at that time, there was a very powerful need to write Hebrew poetry, Hebrew novels. This was, that began, of course, before, already in the 19th century. It was getting stronger at the end of the 19th century. But it was together with the movement to return to Eretz Yisrael. Until that time, it was the Yiddish one. But with the revival, with the Tchiyah to come back to Eretz Yisrael, there was this tremendous surge of Hebrew literature that was coming. And it broke Rav Kook's heart that the secular, many of them anti-religious Jews, hijacked Hebrew literature. That Chernichovsky, mainly Chernichovsky, who, you know, okay, he was a Yid, but he was so far, far, far from Yiddishkeit and so much against the Torah mitzvahs, and he was a brilliant, talented person, but he hijacked, you know, the Hebrew literature, and young people were falling in love with Chernichovsky's writings, with Bialik's, or Bialik was a different madriga, but he was more connected to Yiddishkeit, with Bialik's writings. And why aren't we producing writers of Kedusha, from that perspective of Kedusha? So you open up an essay from Achad Ha'am, whose name was Osher Ginsburg, when he was a young man, he was a huge Talmud Chacham, and you read it, you think you're reading a sefer, but then you realize that this is totally off. This is totally off. And this is what was happening to the generation of Rav Kook's time, and Rav Kook was crying about this. Chol, we have to reclaim Chol, and when Chol is in the hands of Talmidei Chachamim, of Jews, or Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, then Chol becomes a very profound expression of Kedusha, and a very powerful tool to reach, especially the new generation, young people. Because he says, "Official tchuna shel tchias achol," and then a key in prosdor shel hatraklim, because chol is only a chol, the secular chol is only a hallway that leads to kedusha. That leads back to kedusha. It's only for the purpose of getting to the great banquet hall of kedusha. Chol is not. There's no end in chol of itself. Chol doesn't have its own end. I told me that this morning in Kesher Shem. Chol, the secular, the mundane, physical, it doesn't have an end in of itself. There's no tachlis in of itself. The Baruch Hu didn't create a world to have in it some bus of Adam. So it has no tachlis. It's a hallway. It's a hechatimsa to get to Kedusha. So a poem about the beauty of the trees and that's a hechatimsa to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or it could be used completely as something which is physical, in which case it's a denial of the essential character of the Jewish people. And that cannot lead to to the true perfection of Jewish society, nor can it lead ultimately to happiness, to a feeling of simcha, of oisha. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And tragically, the vices that are destroying the world outside of Eretz Yisrael have a very strong hold over the land itself, over the secular community in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, in a minute, they're ready to come back to Kedusha. And the Jews, they're ready to come back to Kedusha. And I believe that they're chalishing, they're longing for Kedusha. And it's our responsibility, of those who are Shematoy Mitzvahs too, which Rav Kook always spoke about, is to communicate to our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael the Kedusha that they're looking for. Because they're not finding fulfillment in Western culture and art and music. They're not finding fulfillment. People are making a lot of money, but they're not finding fulfillment. They're not finding happiness. They're just not. But they can't identify happiness with Yiddishkeit at all. Because to them it seems like something which is the opposite of happiness. They can't see any happiness in Kedusha. So how do we make that bridge to show them that Kedusha is not a world of darkness? Kedusha is not depressing. Kedusha is not limiting. It opens up to you so many new things. It's a world that is rich and it's beautiful and it's exciting. If you know, like to have association, you know, like the, you say a word, another person says a word that reminds him of, right? So for many, 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 many Jews, now I'm talking about even Orthodox. You go over to, like a 16-year-old boy in yeshiva, you say, Yom Kippur. Not to make believe something, to say, tshuva. Tshuva. You just go over to a kid and say, Yom Kippur, he'll say, done with it. That's the association. That's bad. That's a problem. And it goes with everything. Anything that's holy. The immediate association of secular Jews, and unfortunately many, many Orthodox Jews, is something which is boring and dark and not who I am, doesn't speak to me. Sukkot doesn't speak to me. My daughter told me she had a conversation. She was talking to somebody, and this person was saying that this woman was telling my daughter that her husband doesn't go to the Hoshana Rabbah, doesn't. So so my daughter was a little, so why not? So she says, she asked the husband, he said to her, this person said to her husband, told her that doesn't do anything for him, Hoshana Rabbah. Doesn't speak to him. Hoshana Rabbah doesn't speak to him. But that's a problem. It's a serious problem. How do we hear Hoshana Rabbah? How does it speak to us? That's the achrayus of our generation now. Rav Kook was screaming about this and crying to find ways to cross over that bridge. We have to be able to show the new generation, not just the new generation, but the old generation as well, that this is not, Hoshana Rabbah is not the antithesis of what you're looking for in life. It's not the opposite of who you are. It's an expression of who you are. When you recognize something as being who you are, you're excited about it. You're interested in it. It's that simple. If you're an athletic person, you enjoy sports, then when there's a game or to watch or to participate in, you're excited about it because you feel that it speaks to you. But if you feel that Hoshana Rabbah doesn't speak to you, it's like some weird thing that the rabbis made up or something, or even if it's something which other people find to be very holy, but I don't get anything out of banging Hoshanas and walking around seven times screaming stuff I don't understand, whatever. So we have to try to translate Hoshana Rabbah in a way that Jews will understand that, oh, it's speaking to me. Because everything in Yiddishkeit is speaking to every Jew. Everything is speaking to every Jew. But you need talented people to translate it. It's hard. It has to be translated. In every generation that's necessary, but more so now than ever before. people are much more educated in the Bichlal now, and they're not going along with doing things mechanically like they used to. Years ago, even when I was younger, people just did what they were told to do. All kinds of kashas, like, well, why am I doing this? Maybe you thought of it, but you didn't say it to you. You just did it. And you see a lot of that with the older generation, like my age and older. A lot of Jews that they show me misses, but they, you know, like you go ask one of these Jews, like walk over to them and says, like, why do you do this? I said, that's what we do. And that worked for him to do it, not to get closer to God or anything like that, but it worked for him. He did it. But the part of the wonderful chutzpah of the end of time is that people are saying now, like, I don't get it. I'm not doing it. There's something very holy in that too, which Rav Kook spoke a lot about. The chutzpah that the Gemara said will be before Mashiach comes. No, I don't get it. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I don't want to do it. Unless I have a connection to it, I'm not doing it. That's a very chashuv thing. Of course, that's not the right way. We have to do everything what we're supposed to do. We have to keep all halach. But the fact that someone says, I don't have any connection to this. If you explain this to me, maybe I'll be interested. That's a reasonable thing. It's not unreasonable. The problem is, we get very defensive about that, because we just don't know how to translate it. So just imagine, since I use Hoshana Rabbah as an example, how would you explain Hoshana Rabbah to someone? Didn't we just go through the Gemara Chasima Taiva on Yom Kippur? Like, so now what's this? I thought it was like happy time. So, like, what's going on? What's Hoshana Rabbah? So imagine a secular person comes over to any one of you, myself, any one of us, and says, I find it very fascinating that you guys are doing this thing, and there's some like Yom Kippur tunes and stuff. And can you tell me? I'm interested to understand more about Hoshana Rabbah. No. So you're going to suggest some tapes that you heard? What are you going to do? Yeah. So if Cook was screaming, what's the matter with us? Those of us who are Hoshana Mitzvahs, since we ourselves are not looking for the pnimiyas, unfortunately, we don't understand the pnimiyas of Hadvarim, we can't communicate with others. You're never called on by Rebbe in Yeshiva, and the Rebbe said to you to explain Taisus, and you said, I understand, but I can't explain it, and the Rebbe says, then you don't understand it. So, how does that make our secular brothers and sisters feel? You know, they have is that we're a bunch of idiots that we just do things like robots. That's what makes it. And why should I become another one of them? They're not into it. I don't see that they're so happy. I don't see that they're so excited about it. They don't look like they're into it. So I need to be like that? I might as well enjoy my life. They're not happy. They're not enjoying themselves. They're happy. They're looking forward to this. They're looking to finish up as fast as they can, to get in late, to finish early, to finish whatever. So why should I do that? So just imagine that if someone comes and asks you, what's Hoshana Rabbah? Why should I observe that day? What does it mean to you, Hoshana Rabbah? Wait, you say Kreplach? What does it mean to you? We just went through it. What does it mean to you? What is that Chasima? Why are you dancing a Simchas Torah? I'm happy. I love the Torah. Yeah, how much time a day you spend doing that stuff? It really makes you so happy? You don't look so happy to me. No, I really, according to Halach, I'm happy. Shachnar Paskins that I'm happy today. Shachnar Paskins that you're happy today? You're happy because someone rules in an old book that says that you're happy? Are you happy or you're not happy? Are you happy or you're not happy? Would you rather be someplace else? Would you rather be doing something else? Then you're not happy. So how can we communicate Yiddishkeit to others? How do we communicate it? How do we translate it? If we ourselves don't understand it. Someone of Cook said, Havu or light, more light. Enter into the depths of Torah, Pnimiyas HaTorah, the light of Torah. and learn how to translate it, to communicate it, so that everyone, every single Jew will be able to see the beauty of what Hoshana Rabbah is. Everyone will be able to understand that Hoshana Rabbah is not some strange, weird, old thing, but it's something which is mamish. This minute of my life, it's speaking to me. This minute of my life, it's exactly what I'm going through right now in my life. Hoshana Rabbah. It's exactly that. That's what it is. It's exactly what. It's the most current. It's the most up to date. It's the most up to date. And that's the meaning. When somebody said to Alter Rebbe, there was a maskil that came to Alter Rebbe, you know, like a reform guy said to Alter Rebbe, it's, you know, because the way the Rebbe was dressed and everything, is Rebbe, you have to move along with the times. So the Alter Rebbe said, I last week is gracious and this week is precious. No, I'm moving with the times. What is it about Parshas Bereishis that speaks to you? How do you translate the Eitz Hadas? How do you translate Adam and Chava and Gan Eden? How do you communicate Shabbos? How do you communicate it? First to yourself, and then if you understand it, then you feel it, and mimeila to others. That is the challenge of this generation before Mashiach comes. Because the old way is not working. It's not working. So how do you communicate it? So when one realizes that ha'ofi shal atchuna shal atchias achol enan kim prozda shal hatrakna, that everything that exists, all that's mundane, everything that exists is a prozda. It's leading to that trakna, to that banquet hall of kedusha. That's where it began, and that's where it goes back to. Everything is that dance, that circle of simplest Torah. Everything. So what Rav Kook is saying here now is that this tremendous, tremendous urgency that Jews are feeling right now when he was saying this in Eretz Yisrael to revive Chol, art and music, and literature, and the economy, and agriculture. Rav Kook says, but it's taking place a lot without Kedusha. Still, he says, this is a prozda. This is also to be optimistic about, because this is a prozda that leads to the Traklin. We're on our way. Because for so long we were in Golus, and we were suffocating and dying, and now we're all excited to be back, and we can breathe, and we're nice to sell. So this excitement over Chol, over the mundane, over physical life, in Eretz Yisrael, to be free, to be in our own place, and to build it. This excitement is fantastic. But Rav Kook says, but remember, it's only a hallway that leads to the trackland of Kedusha. It's not the end. And if we're not careful, we can become unhinged from Kedusha, which has happened. But to look at it in a positive way, whereas everybody else, of course, is screaming and yelling and cursing all the secular, what was happening with the secular Jews. And Rav Kook saw this as Hatsa'odim HaRishonim Sha'ayelad Maschil Aleches. The first steps that a child begins to take. The first steps. Vashehem Yevi'uhu Lorutz Oirach Kagibor. But from those first steps, eventually he'll come to run like a gibor, like a warrior, he'll be able to run with strength. So these are the first steps. So Rav Kook was saying, don't be so shocked that a lot of Jews that are throwing away Torah mitzvahs and they're going after all these secular things, because in Golis, for all of the years, they couldn't be in our own place, and people didn't feel b'chlal connected to, so many people weren't connected to the Yiddishkeit. So now they're coming to Eretz Yisrael and they're throwing off the old Malchus Shemayim, they're being parik all. But this, he says, this longing that Jews have to improve our physical existence in our land are the first steps of the child. Are the first steps that ultimately to run are the first steps. But the success or the failure depends upon those who are shomer mitzvahs, Torah mitzvahs, teaching and educating and communicating the Kedusha to these Jews. And they're interested in it. They're interested. All signs in Eretz Yisrael show. Somebody told me that there was a drone or something. I don't know. They took a shot of over Tel Aviv or Haifa or something on Yom Kippur. Still empty streets, no cars. There's something. That's not something. Of course, it's something. Quiet. Not talking about a group. Not talking about Yerushalayim or Bnei Brak. In Tel Aviv, even in Haifa, quiet. Yom Kippur. So, if the streets are empty in Yom Kippur, it means that the hearts are full, and we just have to communicate. We have to be able to get to the next place after Yom Kippur. But it means that every single person who's not driving, because he has a kesher, he feels a kesher to Am Yisrael, he feels a kesher to Kedushas Yisrael, to Nishmas Yisrael. So how do we get the rest of the story over? That's the challenge that we're in right now. How to communicate that. And Rav Kook said a million times over and over and over that it cannot happen without Pnimius HaTorah. It cannot happen without entering into the inner light of Torah. And learning how to understand that and to translate that and to communicate that to our brothers and sisters. So they'll see the beauty of what Yiddishkeit is. Because they're not hearing, do this and don't do that. They're just not hearing it. We're not hearing it either. We do it because we have to. We're not hearing it. It's not like that. That's not what's exciting. Okay, now Ois Beis is the last part of the bigger Torah, which is Paragimel in the Eretz Hatchia. That's what you have on the pages in front of you. So let's just read the first little paragraph of that. Let's read the first paragraph. We'll go back and forth from Lashon HaKodesh to the translation. And please hold on to the pages and we'll bring them next week in Yetz Hashem. Kishah HaChaim, a real concern. Not to say for the pages. Kishah HaChaim Porchim, when life flourishes. Kishiyesh Lehem, Kiluyei, Hayitzir v'hamada haru'uyim, when it has the worthy revelations of creation and science. When life is flourishing. And life flourishing means that there's scientific discoveries and there are worthy revelations of creation. Creation, also art and music and literature and science. Shachayim Parchim. Life is flourishing. E.F. Shaklal, Shadeus Tiana Kvuos, Rakal Pimad Beya Achas, Signon Echad. It is totally impossible that opinion should be fixed according to a single stamp, a single style. When there's healthy life, when life is flourishing, it's not possible that everybody should agree. When there's an unhealthy situation, then everybody's agreeing. Like North Korea is an unhealthy place. You ever see a picture of those at Chevrolet? Of course, they all look the same to me anyway. You know, that's a terrible thing to say because I think we all look the same to them. But it's not just that. That's very much what communism and fascism, of course, is about. Is there's a single stamp. So we all think the same way. We all dress the same way. We all act the same way. It's very, very unhealthy. When life is flourishing and people can express who they really are, it's totally impossible that opinion should be fixed according to a single stamp, a single style. It's totally impossible. Many of our schools don't get that, right? Many of our schools don't get that. Our communities, our schools don't get that. My wife and I were talking yesterday about how it's so interesting how things were when we were younger. Because there was a conversation I had with a parent. This parent is like micromanaging every single move of the kid's life, like who each friend is and where he goes, and you know, this friend I don't want for you, and you can't talk to this kid. Mark and I were talking. I don't remember my parents ever telling me like who I should be friends with or not. Or my parents didn't grill me like where I was that night. Or they said, "Come home by 12 o'clock, or we're going to kill you." You know, whatever. There was a curfew, but wasn't it Indian like? And I had friends on my block that weren't Jewish, and the rule was not to go into the house. But as far as playing and talking with them, it's like I came off. I said, "What did he tell you? What did he talk to you about? What did he talk to you about?" Well, they asked me. There was a certain trust, and there was a certain comfort that we had. And there were all different kinds of Jews on my block too, religious and non-religious, and Lahavdil Goyim and Jews. There wasn't Indian. We played together. It wasn't an Indian. Like, there was no Indian at all. So we're trying to understand. So what's happening now? Okay, so things are a lot scarier now, for sure. Things are much more open now than they used to be 50 years ago, 60 years ago. So it's scarier. But there was no thought that my father or mother ever had, or I'm sure that those who are my age over here, that we're all the same. There was an understanding that people are different. And you're a big boy, figure it out. Like, just because you're playing with a Chinese guy doesn't mean that you're going to start, you know, becoming a Confucianist or something. But that's how it is now. If my kid's talking to a non-religious kid, he's going to be non-religious. And as a result, they have to build separate buildings and communities. You know, your kid can't see a chiloni. You can't have in the building a chiloni, lest my child become defiled by that chiloni. In my class, when I was in yeshiva, I'd say a third of the kids were Chal Shabbos. The families were not Shomer Shabbos. And in the same class, we had kids with Pais. We were all friends. I mean, my father never said to me, "Don't talk to the kid that's not religious." He said, "Don't eat in the house." So, don't eat in the house. That was the only rule. Can I go to play there? You can go play. Don't eat over there. But you can go play. That's the only instruction I got. And he didn't ask my father. He told me once. That was it. And I know, when I go to the kids that are not religious, we don't eat. But it wasn't like, I can't go to the non-religious kid because the non-religious kid is going to mess me up. We didn't have such a thing. People were different. They don't know what to do now. In the Haredi society in Israel, what do you do? How can Haredi now sit in the same office with people who are not religious? What's going to happen to them? It's a serious problem. How can they be in the same army? What's going to happen to them? What are we going to do? This is a new thing. For thousands of years, Jews live with other people. And we figured it out. When life flourishes, people can be different. And you know who you are, and you have confidence in who you are, and you can respect somebody else, and you could get along. Nowadays, if your kid is in a class, and that class, this happens all the time, I'm dealing with this all the time with schools, and there's a kid in that class that's doing things that are not so good. So then the parents get together and they go to the principal. We got to get rid of that kid. That kid can't be in my son's class. Can't be in my son's class. Because my son could be affected by him. It could be ruined by him. This is only the last few years. This way of thinking. It's a thing. I've never ever heard my parents say to me who to talk to. Who to be friends with. It was such a thing. Where I went. I never got a thing of where I went. My parents trusted that I we didn't do crazy things. Okay, there's things that are scarier now, I understand. But it's hard raising children like this. And it's hard for children to grow up in like the KGB, you know what I mean? Parents are like KGB. If the slightest thing that's different, if the school sees there's something that's a little bit different about this kid, Zo, Aros, out. It's a threat to our entire society over here that we tried so hard to build. Something that's some ki'ilu is perfect. It's not. When everybody's the same, it's a symptom of something that's unhealthy. Not health. When life flourishes, when it has worthy revelations of creation, science, it's totally impossible that opinions should be fixed to point to a single stamp, a single style. It's impossible. When life flourishes, it's impossible. When life is not flourishing, North Korea, everybody's the same. Everybody's the same. Or in that community that you're in, or that school, or that, you know, everybody's the same. Many times I had guests that came into the shul and said, I don't understand. You have the same shul, you have kippot sugot, and you have shtreimelech, and you have gartel, and you have guy comes in sandals and a t-shirt or something. How is that? How is that? And I'm saying, I don't understand how it's not like that. How is it not like that? So all of you wear shtreimelech? Two-thirds of you want to wear sandals. Don't tell me. Two-thirds of you would like to wear t-shirts. Yeah, you see the strimals. You'd like to wear the t-shirts. And I got guys here in t-shirts that want to wear strimals. That's how life is. When life is flourishing. So, people are different. People are different. The order of life's character, and let's first read Lashon HaKodesh. Sidurei HaTzivyon Shebehem Holchim Tom Bimata Lamala. The order of life's character always goes from lower to higher. Mimilu shel chayim b'midah mu'etes, lamilu chayim b'midah merubah, yizar kolush lazara oz umakrin. The order of life's character always goes from lower to higher, from lesser life content to higher life content, from a weak glow to a powerful and brilliant glow. Now, Rav Kook is going to explain what that means. The nature, the order of life's character is not the way pessimistic Western civilization presents it, that everything is getting lower and lower and lower. But the order, the true order of life's character goes from lower to higher, from lesser life content to higher life content, to higher, from a weak glow to a powerful, brilliant glow. But that's the nature of the Jewish people. It's not the nature of Western civilization. But the nature of Am Yisrael is Kedusha. And Kedusha, there's a cloud, there's a rule, as you all know in Halacha, that's Malim, okay, there's Kedusha always grows. Kedusha always increases. Kedusha always grows. Always ascends. That's the nature of Kedusha. It ascends higher and higher. So the nature of the character of the Jewish people is that things should go from a higher, from a lower, lesser life content to a higher life content. So initially something appears to be very simple, mundane, physical, and plain, and it ascends. Through the Kedusha of Am Yisrael, it is lifted to a higher place. It ascends to a higher place of Kedusha, because the essential character of Am Yisrael is Kedusha. And when something is in our hands, it's able to ascend to a higher place. From Chol to Kodesh. That's when we're ourselves, when we're not imitating others, when we're ourselves. When we are true to ourselves, things move from a lower to a higher place. All that exists ascends to a higher place. From a weak glow to a brilliant glow. But when we're not ourselves, when we're trying to imitate what a cook speaks here, we'll do this next week, European culture. So then things go from a higher place to a lower place. Just look at what's happening in Europe now. From a higher place to a lower place, it says. What's happening? So, next week, Mr. Shum, we're going to please try to hold on to these pages, and we're going to see what Cook tear Europe apart. And bring us back there, just so.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.